You are listening to W. Dean Muhammad, the Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. And now, Imam W. Dean Muhammad.
The following lecture by Imam Muhammad is entitled Human Intellect, Part 2, recorded September 27, 1992, at the University of Illinois in Follinger Auditorium in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois.
I ain't listening to him. I don't want nobody to tell me. He's a traitor. He's a traitor to the black race. You know, make all up all kind of excuses. But if they heard Hitler was going to be here today, he was a traitor to the human race. They'd be all around there, stand all out there, want to see and hear Hitler. Strange people. But that's the way things go, you know. But thank God, we do have some real, real wonderful people. And you're here right with me today. And you're going to be with me in Robbins, Illinois, or wherever I go. I know that. We do have some real wonderful people. And we are growing. Don't think I'm saying this to say I'm downhearted. No, no. We are growing. Our situation is improving. Our knowledge is growing. And we are growing in spirit and hope and faith and in knowledge. We are growing. And I will say also in worldly means, we are growing. I'm hearing about the business people of our community throughout these United States, and I feel very proud of them. They're growing. And we expect that we will continue to grow. Allah is with us. We are Muslims. We follow the Quran, the guidance of God, and we follow the example that God gave us, the human example, Muhammad the Prophet. So we should be successful, and we will be successful always. We all want to raise our grade level. This is true for all types in society. The serious-minded want to excel in the eyes of others and in the looking glass that he looks into to see himself. He wants to excel. He wants to be a little better. If he's vain, he'll just make himself look a little pretty cosmetic, you know, use a little cosmetic touch. But if he's a person of little depth, he will question his soul as he looks into the mirror. And he wants to make improvements on his soul as well as on his outer appearance. The jokers want to excel among the jokers and also in the looking glass too. We all have egos and the inherent need to feel good about our grade level. We have that inherent need to feel good about our grade level. The stupid person wants to feel good about his grade level. The person who delights in being stupid, he wants to feel good about his grade level. If he didn't prove himself to be more stupid than his challenger, he feels degraded. And he works hard at being more stupid than his challenger, you see. So whether it's negative or positive, all of us are striving for excellence, aren't we? So I guess Satan, he wanted to be an excellent opponent to man, and he proved himself fit for that challenge. Because he is an excellent opponent to man. Satan, the devil. The aim for excellence is a motivation in our flesh and bones. That's what we mean by inherent. It's in our very flesh and bones. It's our life, that motivation. Moreover, it's human and community service that we want. That's in our very nature. We want to be of human and of community service. Some people gain national dominance after being told the purpose that their purpose on this earth is to rule the earth. Now, I've studied history and myths And I find that that language is in the history and myths of nations past and some still existing. They were sensitized to believe that their purpose on this earth is to rule the earth. That they're special, they are to rule other people. They are to be superior. Others gain national dominance after being told their purpose on this earth is to excel in rendering services that benefit the whole of the earth. Their purpose is to excel, compete with others, and to excel even their own achievements, their own margin of achievement, to excel, beat that mark, like an Olympic competition, a person competing in the Olympics. He comes to the Olympics to compete there, but he is also outside of the Olympics. He's competing with his last high score, to beat his last high score. He's challenging himself to excel, to beat the last score, get a better score. Dear people, we on this earth to compete in rendering of service of the greatest use of benefit to the greatest number of people on this earth. This service may sound to you, or this idea may sound philosophical. We are here on this earth to serve the betterment of life. The betterment of life. Our prophet, the prayers and peace be on him, he said, the best of you, khairukum, man yanfun nas, are those who benefit people. The best of you are those who benefit people, who are useful to human beings, useful to the people. The best of you. And we know he also pointed to other attributes or other merits to identify the best of us. But that's one of them. Our service to humanity is one of them. That we can't live a life, a selfish life, not caring about how our life is going to affect another person. We have to care about how our life is going to influence and affect another person. We got to live to make a contribution to the human life, the life of human community. First of all, beginning with the nearest to you, yourself, your family, your immediate family, and then extending out to embrace or to encompass the whole community on this earth, all nations, all people. This is what God wants from us. And he gave us models in his prophets and messengers to show us that. Muhammad the prophet, he established that. He lived that. He didn't live for white or black or for Arab or non-Arab. He lived for humanity. His service was service to humanity. Now I hear some angels whispering, "Well, the service is to Allah." But Allah says, "Nothing reach him but your obedience, your taqwa." We're supposed to do it respecting Allah above all things. We're supposed to do it to please Allah above all who want us to please. But Allah does not wait for us to help him with money, or with science, or with social service, or with medicine. He needs none of that. Or with good counseling. Allah doesn't need any of that. We need that. So our usefulness is not a benefit to God. Our usefulness is a benefit to mankind. And that's why the prophet said, man yankonas, who benefits people the most. Philosophically speaking, our passions that overpower us when taking on some desire, some interest, can be a woman, can be an opportunity to earn better income, whatever it is. Passions will take us up, overpower us and take us up. Same passions may take us down to ruin, down to corruption. These passions are passions for life in the broadest context of life. But we can't understand that. We can't realize that. Everything is connected. I love this woman, and I think that this love is just for that woman, maybe. I become so much occupied with her that I think that all this love is just for her. No. She was put here. She has relatives. She has persons she loves. You see, love can't be all for her. She will have children. The love can't be all for her. Maybe. If she has no children, that doesn't matter. The love can't be all for her. They're going to arise interest between the two of you. You're going to share interest. And if you don't give some of your love to those interests, how can you love a woman who has interest and not love her interest? So you see, love is for life. And the human being is a living, that's why we love it. You don't love a dead woman, do you? If you do, you're really out of it. You love the memory of a dead woman, but you don't love a dead woman. Yeah, so love is for the living. Love is for the living, and it's for all the living. And the more you grow in love for life, love life. You're supposed to love life. Love life in its excellence. Love life in its beauty. Love life in its intended direction that God gave it. Love life. Supposed to love life. Don't love death. Don't love disease. Don't love misery. Don't love pain. Marquis de Sade, he loved pain. You know what? Don't love that. Love life. Love life in its excellence. Love life in its beauty. Love life in its intended direction that God gave it. Love life. You're supposed to love life. And those who will love animals, they are more mature in their love for humans than those who love humans and don't love animals. Yes. I don't like a person who loves only human beings but don't love animals. Something in me won't let me like them. No, if you want to become more bigger and more mature in your love, more complete in your capacity for love, you have to love life, all life. Because all life is one and interconnected. All life is one and interconnected. If we had this kind of love for Allah, love for His creation, love for life, we wouldn't have the serious problems of ecology that we have now, would we? No, we wouldn't have the serious problems of endangering certain species, even man, polluting the air, polluting waters, making all these serious problems. We wouldn't have that if the love for life had been given us from childhood and had been put into our culture. Into our culture, or even into our curriculum, our school curriculum. No, we wouldn't have all these serious problems. This is what I register when I read the Quran and when I study Muhammad the Prophet. Muhammad the Prophet didn't only teach respect, good treatment to animals, but also even to vegetation and trees. He said, see that you harm no tree when you go to war with the people. Don't destroy their crops, damage their trees. Don't attack the person unless they bear arms. That's what the prophet said. Peace be upon him, prayers and peace be on him. Don't attack anyone that's not a bearing arms. Are these Muslims throughout the world behaving like that now? Who are they following? They're not following that great man that I'm talking about. Their behavior doesn't say so. We should understand that we do not give up love. We transfer love. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. You may be disappointed in your mate, or disappointed in your father, your mother, sister, or brother, or friend. And the great love that you were giving them, you may hate that you were giving them all that love. You may cut it off. That love is going to be transferred to something else. That love is there. It's not going to go away. It's only going to be shifted, directed, redirected to something else. You're going to give it to self-destruction. Are you going to give it to selfishness? Are you going to give it to correcting your ways? You're going to love the things that are best for you more. You're going to see that that person was a problem for you, and I've been neglecting myself. I haven't been putting my priorities in order, and I've been putting values and seeing my values incorrectly. Now I'm going, so that love is transferred and shifted to other places, right? Yes. Some will go and buy a dog, go buy a little puppy. So what am I saying this to say? See, I told you my father was a psychologist, unlicensed, and I am too. I'm saying that to say this. God created the human being with the biggest capacity for love. But if he's not keeping to the lifeline, the human lifeline, the real lifeline of human life, the lifeline of excellence, if he's not keeping to that, if he's alienated from that, then he can become the worst people. God says that he created, pardon me, us in the best of most, but consequently, some fall to the lowest of the low. Some fall to the lowest of the low. You see? So that's the possibility for us because of this limited freedom or this free will we have. Now, when I see the African-American people giving themselves to foolishness, following the popular trend to just give all their free time to music, song, dance, street talk, and if not that, self-destruction, drug abuse, violence, murder. When I see that, I see misdirected love. And a reversal, even, of love. You know, they say love and hate are just two sides of the same coin. One side is head, the other tail. I don't think that's a perfect description, but it does help to give us to give a picture of how love and hate operate. You know, you love, and that love becomes less and less and less and less until you get to a point where you can't recognize any love. Then it starts to be hate. Little hate, little more and more. That's how it goes. Devotional urge in our nature is very important. Devotional urge is the strongest force in human life. Devotional urge. Now, we say, that boy of mine, he just wastes his life. He's not devoted to anything. Yes, he is. He's devoted to wasting his life. Everybody is going to be devoted to something. Look how strong the devotional nature is in us. Allah says in the Quran, says, and glorify God. Be excited about the new religion with the equal passions. equal enthusiasm that you had for the false gods. Say, and even with more enthusiasm than that. This is what Allah tells in the Quran. That's addressed to the Meccans who were idolaters and who made you all excited and made great celebrations and great spiritual show in worshiping or service to their false gods. So the Quran is bringing to their attention that, look, you discredit, you are not respecting your own intelligence. Now here God has blessed you with really a religion that gives you a good image, gives you excellent image, gives you excellent opportunity, makes you feel good about yourself, and you are not as excited about this as you were about that ignorance that you worship in the days of ignorance or jahiliyyah. You see, that's what Allah is saying to them. So what does that tell me? That tells me that the devotional nature is very strong. Those people that were giving their devotion blindly to those things. They were giving their devotion blindly to those things. So when they open their eyes and see with their reasoning, sometimes they don't give as much recognition and devotion to the new enlightenment or to the new value that they have. You see? And many of you are like that. Many of you would be saying, oh, praise be to Allah for all of you, jumping up on your feet every 2 minutes. Oh, praise, stand up for all of Elijah Muhammad. And get your quick charge and go back and repeat the same thing again. But you are not excited today. You're not excited today. You're not excited. So you need to read the Quran and say, no, when Allah bless you with Quran and the real religion of Islam, you wake up and realize that you are cheating yourself and you are cheating what you've been given by not showing at least equal enthusiasm when we should really show more enthusiasm. Devotional urge is very strong in us. We're going to be devoted to something. That devotion is going to eventually lead us to correct our ways, to correct our life, and follow the line of excellence in our life, or it's going to destroy us. It's going to destroy us. Without direction, without faith in human excellence, without faith in the direction of life that God gave when he created human beings, we find most of our youngsters, they're giving themselves to idleness, giving themselves to self-destruction, too many giving themselves to drugs and violence and even murder. What draws them to the game? Devotional nature. The devotional nature. They don't see anything. We can't show them anything that makes them feel that this is worthwhile devoting themselves to. So they're devoted to the gang solidarity, camaraderie, support from each other. That's what they're devoted to, you see? And then they go and tax and they get their own interests and they go and tax. We were coming through a neighborhood last week, and it was frightening. We saw, it looked like 100 and some boys. It had to be 140 boys or more. And they were just roaming the streets. It was a little bit after dusk dark. Dangerous, very dangerous. And we said, we know something is going to happen terrible tonight. No way that many boys can get together and nothing happen to sadden their families, their mothers, their fathers, their friends. I'm sure something happened. Because they have a sense of power. When the more the numbers, the more sense of power they have. And they're young, so they become drunk. They get drunk. They're made drunk by the sense of power. And they have to realize it. They have to execute it. They have to exercise that power on somebody. They're just not going to have it. They don't have the maturity to have that kind of great weapon and don't not use it. So they have that great sense of power. They're going to attack some innocent boy or rob somebody or challenge another group of boys and kill up each other, you see? Human life is very complex. It's not simple. It's very complex. Human life is not something to take for granted. We can't manage human life like we managed cooking breakfast this morning. It's much more complicated than that. We should take seriously the management of our own human life. And any idea, whether it's religious or worldly, any idea that encourages the individual human person to accept more responsibility for the management of their own individual personal life is one that I support and appreciate. I don't care what it is. I don't care what the idea is. If it encourages a human person, individual human person, to accept more responsibility for the management of their individual human life, their own personal life, I have to salute that idea and feel very comfortable with it. But any idea that just call us to a surface level pride, to be proud of our race because we are black-skinned, because we don't burn in the sun, we burn in the shade. You know, that stuff is foolish to me. It's foolishness to me. You know, God has given every people something that is uniquely their own. And you can see merits and demerits in all of us. If you're rational minded and intelligent, you can be led by rational discussion to accept that no race has any real basis for claiming a superiority over another. And I'm tired of seeing our people, African-American people, following those who sell artificial pride to our people. I'm tired of that. I am. I don't have much sympathy with people like that anymore. I don't have much patience with people like that anymore. They're selling people false ideas of their origin, false ideas of their greatness. That's silly. Your real greatness is right with you. It's in your heart and in your intellect. That's where your real greatness is. It's not in the color of your skin. The color of your skin, God says He has given us the differences of color and even the differences of our language, the tongues, the languages, as signs. As a sign. Those who are led by the devil, by the deceiver, they take sign in one people to be a sign only for that people. When the sign in every people is a sign for all people. Yes, our black skin is a sign of what's in all people. He may be red, he may be brown, he may be white. Our black skin is a sign of what's in him too. And his skin is white, his sign, his color, is a sign of what's in all people. Though our skin be black, his skin is a sign of what's in us too. But the Satan, he deceived the people to think, to mistranslate, to misinterpret the signs that God gave. And he makes the white race think that blackness is only a sign of what's in us who wear blackness. Who wear blackness, you see? The light, when it's shown, broken up into its different parts through the raindrops as a rainbow, we see the light that is really, they say white light, but no, the white light is invisible. It's not white.
We'll be right back after these brief announcements.
Thank you for your continued support for Imam W.D. Muhammad's ministry. Your contributions are sincerely appreciated. Send your donations to the Ministry of W.D. Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. That's the Ministry of W.D. Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. Thank you. And now we return to Imam W.D. Muhammad. Please turn the tape over to side two for more of Imam W.D. Muhammad.
That bud is white. It's fire. But as the light we see by is not white, it's invisible. If it was white, you couldn't see. Transparent. Transparent. But the prism or the rain, the water, will break up the light and show its various colors to us. Now, the red we see in the spectrum, does it tell us what's in red only? No, it tells us what's in light. Now, if you can understand light as being, if you follow my comparison I'm making here, we all are human. Human. And the various colors that we have on our faces tell are signs of what's in every human. What's in every human? Your blackness on your face is a sign of faith. It's a sign of obedience, blind obedience. Faith and blind obedience. It is a sign of rest. But it is also a sign of death. It is also a sign of ignorance. Why? Because the beginning of the intellect is ignorance. When the intellect first comes into existence, it knows nothing. It's ignorance. Ignorant. And the wisest of men is the man who says to God, God, I'm ignorant. God, I know nothing. You know all. So the wisest of intellect is the black intellect, not the white one. Not the one that boasts, I know everything. Not the one that's trying to show off and trying to present itself as the bright light. That's not the wisest of intellect. The wisest of intellect is the intellect that shows itself black. God, I know nothing. I know nothing. Doesn't mean that it knows nothing, but it is not, the intellect is not giving itself credit for what it knows. And it's realizing that though it knows a lot, it's still depending on God. You see? So that requires great faith too. So if I would discuss to you the symbolic meanings of the term black, you will find that black has ugly meaning and black has beautiful meaning. Black has such beautiful meanings to the Arab people that they use a derivative from the term black to address each other with respect or honor. Sayyid, as Sayyid so and so and so. They still do that. As Sayyid so and so. It comes from Sud, means black. But mind you, I say the same attributes that's in you are in all other people, in you and all other people. And the same in them are in them and all other people. So you're white too. And white has mostly beautiful meanings, especially in white culture. But in some other cultures, white doesn't have all beautiful meanings. It has also some bad meanings. Now, I'm not here ever to make anybody uncomfortable. That's not my purpose. I never want to do that. I'm not here ever to discredit anybody's ideas or beliefs. That's not my desire to ever do that. So I hope I'm helping and not hurting. Yes. There's a lot to say about that, but I... I thank Allah. I can look at a man in his face. I don't care what color he is. And his color won't prejudice me against him. No. I wasn't always like that. But I thank Allah. The influence of Quran, Islam on my life, has brought me to look any man in his face, and I will not be influenced by the color of his skin to judge him or to disrespect him or to place or to evaluate him. No. Mm-mm. I don't. Dr. Martin Luther King, he said, he prayed, his words were a kind of prayer, that one day people will be accepted for the content of their character rather than for the color of their skin. Well, I thank God that I can tell Dr. King if he's here. Dr. King, if you're listening, I'm telling you now, Wallace D. Muhammad has lived to measure up to what you hope for. I will not judge a man by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. And many times I won't even judge him by the content of his character, because I find that too many of us are innocent. We didn't do that to our character. We couldn't help it. We're just victims. And if we're shown the right way, we'll come out of the bad character into a good one. When we devote ourselves to destruction, it is a desperate cry in us to be saved from ourselves. That's what's happening. When we see our youngsters devoting themselves to destruction out there, they are crying, they are desperate, and they are crying out to the society, save us from ourselves. Our parents couldn't save us from ourselves. Our homes couldn't save us from ourselves. Now we're in the streets. And you see us, the whole society, you're looking at us. Please save us from ourselves. You'd be surprised how the psychology of the human being works. They're not aware of themselves, that their behavior is really a desperate cry for someone to save them. They're not aware of that themselves. They're needing help. Their nature's doing that, because their minds have become disabled. And it's the society's fault more than it is anybody else's fault. The whole society. Can't blame it on the individual parent, although responsibility is first on the home, on the parents in the home. But when they call it the super culture, the super influence. When the super influence of the world meets your little small influence at home, you ain't no competition for it. You are no competition for it. The child turns on television and everybody's behaving that way. It's the way of the world. It's the accepted way of the world. Child go out in the street and everybody's saying that, talking that language. When he comes back home, you talking a different language. No, your little strength that you have is nothing. The super ego is too much for the ego. And the super ego comes from the environment. Is the ego you get from the environment. Yes. Desperate cry to be saved from ourselves. Or it is a desperate protest against a world that accommodated our fall from divine grace, that accommodated an influence, a cultural influence, that exploits and maximizes the desire in us to sin against our human devotional aim. Allah says that He did not create the human or the jinn except for His worship, except to obey Him, to serve Him. إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ, except to worship Him, except to serve Him, except to obey Him. This is not only an invitation for us to obey Allah, heed His guidance, respect His guidance, and follow Quran and Muhammad. That's not an invitation to that only. That's an eye-opener. That's an eye-opener for the person who is curious, for the person who wants insight into things. That's an eye-opener. It's to tell us that if we give this devotional nature to fractions of the whole, it's going to eventually disappoint us. But if we give this devotional nature to the whole, it won't disappoint us. And there's no way to give it to the whole without giving it to the cause behind the whole, and that is God. Why should we give all our attention to race, sex, money, and unqualified freedom? The answer is understood best when we understand that there's a terminal conflict involving human motivation, terminal conflict that will lead to death, the end, total destruction. Terminal conflict involving human motivation is alienation. It's leaving, breaking off from the human interest, going off from the line of human excellence. For the fashion look, you know, whatever is fashionable today. I used to try to keep up with the fads, but now look like it's all blended into one thing. All you have to do to be in fashion now is just look like you just got out of Sherwood Forest bed. But for the fashion look, some will give up all their earnings. And will only enjoy a short-term high. Because the fashion is going to change, you see. But while spending all our earnings on these short-term highs, we are neglecting our families and our community. And that neglect is not short-term, it's long-term. Family and community establishment is the goal in our devotional nature. Want to be devoted to art, want to be devoted to industry, whatever, science, whatever. All of that is to improve the life of community. So we have better families, better neighborhoods, better communities, better towns, better nations, better communities. In that nature is where the law resides. The law which rewards us or punishes us. And the language in Islam, Al-Qadru Khayrihi wa Sharrihi min Allah Ta'ala. The ordinance of the law of reward and punishment is from Allah the Most High. But it operates in our social nature. It operates right. The best way to provide a condition for us to continue to move in the line of excellence is to acknowledge Creator, that this world did not happen by chance, that this world is the work, this world is the original work of God, the Creator. He designed it, He created it, and He is the best to guide us. One prophet in the Quran, he was challenged by the mighty, powerful ruler who took even divine authority into his own hands and thought he had power over life and death. Then this prophet replied to him. He said, "The Lord," he said, "the God who created me is the God that will guide me. The God who created me is the God that will guide me." There's great knowledge in that. There's great knowledge in that. God placed guidance in the creation. He's the creator of the creation, and He put guidance in the creation. Our religion teaches us to have a respect for creation, to value creation, and to never think ourselves to be the owners of creation, and to never think ourselves to be bigger than creation, or a bigger issue than creation itself. Allah Most High tells in the Quran, "O man, think not that your creation is a bigger matter than the creation of the heavens and the earth." So where Allah lifts us up and wants us to feel good about ourselves, that He made us Khalifa on earth, and put us in a situation, if we obey Him and follow the excellence in our nature, we can get utility, He says, from the skies and from the earth. We can utilize what's in the skies and what's in the earth. And that's what modern science and technology has done and is doing. It is utilizing what's in the skies and what's in the earth. God told us that 1,400 years ago. سَحَرَ لَكُمْ مَا فِي السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْعَرْضِ, that He has made utility for you in what you see in the heavens and what you see in the earth. While He has paid such great respect to us and honored us so highly, He's also cautioned us too that we don't get big-headed while we are realizing the great resources and benefits of natural creation and natural law, that we think ourselves to be more important than this great vast creation we call the material universe or the material system. No, from which we are born and grow. We are born upon this creation, and we grow upon this creation. You who, some of you here, I'm sure you're in college, you're in the university, you're attending the university. I'm sure you can appreciate what I'm saying. You know that all the knowledge you have in the best of your books in your library are nothing but revelation of what is in matter, creation, life, as God made it Himself. Now, I'm sure you wouldn't be a fool to say no to that. In fact, it makes the student heart feel good when he understands that really all of his knowledge, all of his science, and all of his knowledge that he's getting is only an unfolding of creation itself, an unfolding and illumination of matter in his own mind. Isn't that wonderful? This is the respect we need to build in our children and build in our students and build in our adult members for creation. And Allah wants us to respect creation, but to realize that we ourselves are creation and subject to the power, the overpowering forces of creation itself, if we don't follow the God who's over creation, then the creation itself is too much for us. It will overpower us and bring us down to the lowest of the low. Yes. The only power to contend with matter itself is God. And the only way we can manage matter itself, we have to have our obedience and give it to God. Yes, give it to God. Then you're saved. The motivation for our people when they were freed from slavery was a motivation to excellence. They wanted to become better. They were told that they were a slave class, that they, the people who were of the mind that blacks were inferiors told our people, our foreparents, that they were fit for slavery and weren't fit for freedom. That God created them to be slaves. That's what we were told. That's what our parents or foreparents were told. So when we were freed, the motivation was to get opportunity for that was enslaved. The flesh body itself wasn't only enslaved. The mind was restricted. We wanted freedom for our minds. We wanted to take our minds to education, take our minds to better books, take our minds to better situations for the growth of our minds. So we were motivated by the need for excellence or growth along the line of excellence, huh? We were needing to satisfy the aim of excellence in our life that couldn't be satisfied when we were held forcefully to a class or status of slaves. Now we are free. What are we going to do with that? We're free now. What are we going to do with that? Are we going to give our minds to music, song, dance, rhythm, dope, drugs, sex, just senseless sex? Sex with no human base? Anything without a human base, without a base of human value. You got to have human value in the base of everything. If you don't have the human value in the base of anything, then that thing is going to become destructive for you as a human being. Sex. You can't just have sex life and sexual activities without appreciating human values in the very base of sex life. Human values should be in the very base of sex life. And this is what God revealed to us when he revealed the Quran. This was what the prophet wanted to lead us to. This kind of respect, where no matter what we devote ourselves to, all of us are not going to be the same. Some of us will be politically inclined. Some of us will be medically inclined. Some of us will be musically inclined. We're going to be inclined different ways. God says that. To each of you is an inclination. To each of you is an attraction. But turn all your faces to this Qibla. That's what God says. That Qibla is a sign of the original worth of the human being, the original values. Turn your attention to your original values, to your original excellence that made possible home life, social evolution, progress, and the eventual illumination of your mind, the receiving of revelation from God. So God wants us to keep that human base and the human values there, in the base, keep that in the base of all of our interests. Then we will have success. In my closing, certainly I'm a man of race consciousness, and I feel good to say I'm a member of the black race, of the African-American people. Certainly I do. And my soul would never be satisfied if I ignored that. Yes, my soul could never be satisfied if I ignored the need in me to feel good as a member of my people, or my race. And we have a great life and a great history. But the devil, Satan, his enforcers, the satanic culture of the West, has just shattered our senses and wasted so many of us. But that doesn't mean we are lost and hopeless. No, we're not lost and hopeless. We have great minds in the Christian community, great minds in the Muslim community, great minds on these campuses, great minds out there in the streets. We have African Americans that are still decided upon bettering the condition of this race we call the black race. Our case is not hopeless. You are just hearing too much noise from those that don't count, and you're not hearing enough noise from us that do count. And I feel very good about our progress. We are progressing as a people. We have great minds, great people, with great human character, great hearts. And they are working in many places in these United States, all over these United States. They are men and they are women. They are in all areas of human interest. But I won't be really satisfied until we have what I think we started out to have, and I believe we had it for a long time, up until maybe the civil rights heydays of the civil rights movement, when confrontation on the streets with the white man and in the public eye took us away from that. What I'm talking about is men who volunteered and women who volunteered to keep watch on the condition of the black race, of the African-American people, and meet with each other and discuss the condition of their people, and not go out and talk to the white man and complain to him before themselves diagnosing our case and coming up with some information to address our needs and to address our problems, to address our needs and problems and whatever, and sicknesses, and begin to preach through newspapers, through black newspapers, and preach from rostrums, from podiums like this. Preach to the masses that we have to fight these influences. God didn't create us for this. God didn't put us on this earth for this. We have to keep God up in our mind, keep God before us. We have to remember our destiny. We had a sense of destiny with those people. And I hope that we will be influential in forming again an African-American intelligentsia that watches over the needs of our people. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
You've been listening to the ministry of Imam W.D. Muhammad. You are cordially invited to visit your local masjid or Islamic center for Friday Jumu'ah and Sunday Taaleem. Check the Muslim Journal newspaper for the dates and time in your area. Thank you for listening.